And hi, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez, and I'm here to tell you that after being a journalist and a news presenter for four of the biggest networks in the United States, it's time for some context and for some truth-telling. And in that vein, here's what we're going to be talking about. Number one, why are soldiers now patrolling New York subways? And what does that say? Number two, China tells U.S. tech companies, get out. Is it getting mad or is it getting even? Number three, why is Olena Zelenska, the First Lady of Ukraine, in case you didn't know, snubbing First Lady Jill Biden's invitation to sit with her at the State of the Union address? But here's the most interesting story. It has to do with a woman named Victoria Nuland, the queen of the neocons. She's stepping down. Who is she? Why is she so wealthy? And what's this going to mean for Ukraine? Good questions? You bet. This is Direct Impact. So if a picture is worth a thousand words, then this one should be like an entire book. A book perhaps about the future of our country, the future of America. Look at this. And as you're looking at this picture, those members there of the National Guard, they're soldiers, right? Essentially, in fact, some of the same ones who've served in Iraq and Afghanistan. Those guys, those gals, are now patrolling the subways of New York City. The optics of this, just think about it for a minute. The optics of this seem bizarre, to me anyway, because one of the things that I always kind of separated in my mind, maybe because I'm a gringo here and that's the way I think, the way I separated us from the rest of the countries in the world that I've visited, for example, throughout Latin America, is that we don't seem to have a military presence in our daily lives here in the United States. We don't, right? Or at least that's what I always thought. I mean, here's what I mean. Have you ever been, for example, have you ever been on vacation to, like, the Caribbean or to Latin America? I always found that when I went there, I thought it was always unsettling when I went there on trips with my wife and with my kids to see these guys in these full military fatigues holding a machine gun, you know, and they were, like, next to me and my wife and my kids while we were sitting on the beach or outside a store or even at a park. And it always made us question, well, is there something going on here that I need to know about? Why is this guy sitting here with a machine gun, right? How safe can this place be where we're vacationing if there's a guy next to us with a machine gun in full military fatigues? How free is this place? I asked. Well, I'm wondering now, should we be asking the same question about us here in the United States as we learn that 1,000 guards are being sent to patrol the subways? 250 of them are going to be straight troopers. Another 750 of them are going to be National Guardsmen sitting there at the subways as you come in and out and go to work. Why? New York officials are saying that it's for deterrence, to send a message to the potential bad guys. Right. The real reason? The subways are just damn dangerous these days. There have already been 3 killings this year alone. Commuters are being attacked, and recently even a train conductor had his throat slashed. You know how many people use the New York subways, by the way? 3 million people a day.
The United States is reportedly adding dozens of Chinese companies to a trade blacklist later today. In total, around 80 additional companies could be added to the so-called entity list, nearly all of them Chinese.
Did you hear that? Nearly all of them Chinese. So that has been pretty much the big story here in the United States the past 8 years or so. We heard it during the Trump administration. We're hearing it now during the Biden administration. The theme is pretty simple. Go after and punish all Chinese tech companies. What's interesting about this story is, as I've told it over the years and written about it over the years, U.S. tech companies, our guys here, have long been warning us that these China sanctions, these things that we're doing to the Chinese, would end up hurting us, or hurting them, in other words, right? The tech companies in the U.S. Well, guess what? It's happened. Dell, International Business Machines, Cisco Systems, they're all getting kicked out of China as Beijing aims to let its own companies take over all tech operations by 2027. So why are the Chinese doing this? Well, according to them, they apparently don't trust us. American tech giants had long thrived in China as we provided them with tech tools. They provided us with cheap labor. And now China, reacting no doubt to the nasty back and forth with Washington over the last 7 or 8 years, says it's driven to self-sufficiency within the computer industry, its operating systems, and its software systems because it doesn't trust the U.S. tech companies anymore. Can you say tick for tack?
Usually, the wives of presidents are exclusively engaged in peaceful affairs, education, human rights, equality, accessibility, and maybe you expected from me to speak on those topics. But how can I talk about them when an unprovoked, invasive terrorist war is being waged against my country? Russia is destroying our people.
That, in case you couldn't figure it out from her words, is the First Lady of Ukraine speaking recently at the invitation of Nancy Pelosi to the U.S. Congress or a congressional hearing or meeting. She was also invited to attend the State of the Union by First Lady Jill Biden, and they were going to be sitting together for all the world to see. But apparently, Mrs. Zelensky has said, "Nyet." She ain't doing it. She's snubbing the U.S. First Lady, snubbing the event. You want to know why? Here's where this story kind of gets weird. I mean, it reminds me of high school. Pardon me for saying that. So she's snubbing the invitation because she doesn't like the widow of Putin critic Alexei Navalny. You can't make this stuff up, right? But here it is. According to Kiev, officially now, Mrs. Zelenska, yes, that's how you pronounce her name. It's not Zelensky because she's the wife, female, whatever. Anyway, they say that when she heard that Mrs. Navalny, pronounced Navalnaya, was also invited, she said, "Well, then I'm not going. I'm not going if she's going." And apparently she's not going. Her reason, look, it's kind of complicated, but apparently it has to do with Crimea. But to spare you a headache, I'll save you the explanation for some other time and perhaps some other show. Then there's Mrs. Nuland.
Thinks he can wait Ukraine out, and he thinks he can wait out all of us. We need to prove him wrong.
That was Undersecretary of State Victoria Nuland last month discussing tactics to stop Russian President Vladimir Putin on the second anniversary of the Ukraine war. Now, just weeks later, the career diplomat turned top political appointee is retiring.
There you go. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken has announced that his undersecretary, Victoria Nuland, I guess his number two or number three or whatever, is stepping down. Nuland is an interventionist. Do you know what that means? In other words, she likes wars and she likes sending our troops to go fight in wars. She's also large, in very large measure, responsible for the escalation of the war in Ukraine. In fact, outside of U.S. media, she's known worldwide, right? You won't hear about it here because our media doesn't report this for some reason because, I don't know, they just don't want you to know the truth. But she's known throughout the world, and media reports around the world have shown this. She was the person who directed the CIA to start the coup in Ukraine to push out the democratically elected president back in 2014. Did you know that? You probably did if you're watching me from somewhere else outside of Washington. Why did she want him out, by the way? Why did she want that dude, the president at the time, out? Because of his ties to Russia. You see, Victoria Nuland hates Russia. Hates Russia. I mean, with vim and vigor, she hates Russia. Here's the smoking gun now that proves that she did exactly what her critics charge, as she was overheard, by the way, in the planning of this coup.
The date and precise context of the recording are not known. Nuland and the U.S. ambassador to Ukraine, Jeffrey Pyatt, discuss which of the country's opposition leaders they'd like to see in government, and they refer to getting the U.N. involved.
So that would be great, I think, to help glue this thing and have the U.N. help glue it. And, you know, the EU.
No, exactly. And I think we've got to do something to make it stick together, because you can be pretty sure that if it does start to gain altitude, the Russians will be working behind the scenes to try to torpedo it.
So there it is. Now, here's what you need to know. I started this morning and last night doing a little bit of a dig on Victoria Nuland. I wanted to find out, who is Victoria Nuland, right? This is the stuff that I think about Victoria Nuland that's relevant to her pro-Zelensky stance, for example. She is a neoconservative, to say the very least, who also happens to be married to one of the most prolific neoconservatives, perhaps in U.S. foreign policy history. So his her husband, is a guy named Bob Kagan, along with Dick Cheney and Bill Kristol. Great pairing, huh? They actually together founded the Neoconservative Project back in 1997. They actually founded it, right? And then used it to push for the disastrous war that was Iraq. Here's something else. I think this is fascinating. I don't know. You might find it fascinating as well. While Newland makes roughly $180,000 a year as a government employee, I looked it up, she's said to be worth anywhere between $2 to $8 million, conservatively. And though she works for the government, for our government, she also has a long-standing relationship with a private company that handles foreign government affairs. And that would be the Albright Stonebridge Group. Look them up. It seems conflictive. Why? Because those folks, by the way, named after the former Secretary of State, Madeleine Albright, Albright Stonebridge, seems conflictive because they make their money handling complex diplomacy deals with countries all over the world, which means they kind of get to choose who are the good guys, who are the bad guys. They do deals with them. They get paid by them. What do you think? Sounds an awful lot like they're doing foreign policy, no? This is what I want to dig into. So when we come back, what's this mean for Ukraine when the, some would say, architect of our Ukraine policy is out? We're going to be joined by that guy right there. See him? That's Michael Maloof. Say hi, Michael. Former Pentagon official, and George Samueli, who wrote Bombs for Peace, NATO's Humanitarian War on Yugoslavia, and he is an advisor at the Global Policy Institute, and we are coming right back. Do not go away. Talk about this, because I think this whole Victoria Nuland thing is fascinating. We're joined by Michael Maloof. As you know, Michael Maloof is a former Pentagon official, and we're also going to be joined, as I told you about just a little bit earlier, by George Samueli. Welcome, gentlemen. Michael, I begin with you, and I'm thinking to myself here, if I am Zelensky sitting in Kiev, and I'm wondering, so Nuland is out? Wait. That's my gal. That's my go-to person in the U.S. government. That's the one who helped me in 2014. Mm-hmm. What must he be thinking right now?
He's probably seeing the handwriting on the wall. I think this is a signal that it's over and that his offensive, if you can call it that, mm-hmm. is not working. And he's having to retreat.
Well, it's interesting because that actually makes me think, can there be a Ukraine policy without Victoria Nuland? It seems like one hand goes with the other, no?
Well, it's out of the U.S. hands at this point. It's not only the Russians taking the eastern part, but you have countries such as Poland, Lithuania, these other countries that have historical ties to West Ukraine. And the reason why she was just so embedded in Ukraine is that her family came from what was then Tsarist Russia, which is today West Ukraine.
So it's kind of like it would be like making sure the United States attacks Cuba.
Yeah, it's like a family feud.
Because my family came from Cuba before Castro or
exactly.
Something.
It's like a family feud.
It's personal.
It's personal.
Let's go to George Samueli. Is Maloof right? Does the Ukraine policy hedge on her? And is the fact that she's out say that it's going to be tough goings now for Zelensky and his crew?
I'm not sure about that. I think that the United States, the Europeans, they are absolutely wedded to this policy. basically trying to inflict defeat on Russia through Ukraine. I don't think it depends on Victoria Nuland. She obviously has been a central figure in the Ukraine policy right from the beginning, you know, actually going back even to the 1990s. However, I don't think U.S. policy hangs on that. And even the noises that we're getting today from Europe with Macron saying there are no limits, there are no red lines in our support for Ukraine, and then, you know, the British were berating the Germans for being insufficiently zealous in supporting Ukraine. I think we're a long, long way from any policy of abandoning Zelensky.
But here's where I think Michael is right. If we had done the deal that was proposed a year ago or so with Ukraine, if Zelensky would have said, I'll take that deal, let the Russians take that part of the country, and we're good. Let's just finish this. If he had taken it then, he would have lost a heck of a lot less than he's losing now. So it just seems incrementally like it's certainly not going in his direction, wouldn't you argue?
No, that's absolutely right. I think Ukraine made a disastrous, absolutely catastrophic decision in listening to Boris Johnson, and through Boris Johnson to the Americans, of sticking with that policy. But that just shows how absolutely determined the British, the Americans, and NATO are to use Ukraine to inflict a defeat on Russia. Because let's remember, that deal that was on the table in Istanbul was not at all favorable to Russia. It was actually very unfavorable to Russia. The Ukrainian negotiators were amazed at the concessions the Russians were making. But nonetheless, they rejected that deal because they thought they saw this opportunity really to screw Russia over. So absolutely, Zelensky should have taken that deal. But that doesn't mean that the Britain and Americans and NATO are abandoning this policy. I see no evidence of it.
Okay, good. Well, you guys are somewhat in disagreement on that, and I'll accept that. By the way, interestingly enough, as I recall, Vladimir Putin told my friend Tucker Carlson that he was willing to consider that deal and probably would have taken that deal back then, which is interesting looking at it now. If he in fact would have or not, we don't know. That's a part of history now. Michael, back to you. I am bothered. I don't know if you listened to my intro, but I am bothered when I think this Albright Stonebridge group that apparently she has worked for, apparently she's a big to-do there, and so is Blinken, and so are a bunch of people in the Biden administration. When I read about this outfit, it sounds to me like they do like foreign policy.
Well, they're like a shadow government, if you will, in foreign policy. You had Tom Pickering also, who belongs to it, and you have a lot of admittedly some real rhino Republicans who are part of that establishment. Mm-hmm. And so they're sort of a government in waiting, and they advise on who will not be a good candidate.
Well, apparently they'll have to wait long. All they had to wait for was for Biden to get elected, because as soon as they got elected, he took all of them from that company and then put them into his State Department to run the State Department.
That's right.
There seems like there's some folly in that for me. I mean, because they're a private company, that means they do deals with these governments.
The Republicans do it. They pull them out of Heritage and other think tanks. I mean,
that's conflictive, it seems to me, isn't it?
Well, it might be conflictive, but that's the way it is in Washington.
So you could then make an argument that the reason we do the things we do, let's just pick Ukraine because we happen to be talking about it. I don't want to pick too much on Ukraine. So in many ways, the reason we're doing Ukraine is because these guys, when they were in those companies, already had a standing policy or deals that they had done with the Ukrainian government.
Well, not only
now they're going to work on their behalf.
But they also had a neocon image of containment of Russia. Ukraine is just a stepping stone for Russia. Got to keep that in mind. That's why I disagree with my colleague here a little bit, that the Europeans are now beginning to understand the U.S. got them into this mess. They're stuck with it. The U.S. is thinking of pulling out, especially if Trump were to be elected. And that affects NATO.
But let's leave Ukraine aside, because now I'm like a dog with a bone stuck on this Albright Stonebridge thing. And I'm thinking to myself, man, that just sounds so incredibly corrupt. If you work for a government, if you work for a private company and that private company's business is dealings with governments and you take money from those governments to do their deals, now you go work for the government and I pay you and you're still going to do those same deals, but now you're going to do them on behalf of me and my government and the taxes that I pay you, that's a conflict of interest. No? That's kind of what I'm thinking here, George. No?
Well, it is, but the things like the Albright-Stonebridge Group, much like the Carlyle Group, I mean, these are private equity firms. And what do? They go to countries and they secure investments. That's what they these are, you know, you bomb the countries, you pulverize them, you install a friendly government following your color revolution, and then you make money. I mean, that's the whole point that the Albright-Stonebridge Group, they make money. They go there with their clients. And, you know, how do I, you know, invest in this country? And that's what they do. And Albright, in particular, she made a lot of money on Kosovo. She was the big bomber-in-chief of Kosovo in the 90s. And then, hey, presto, I can make a lot of money here. And that's how people like Newland get rich.
That sounds corrupt as hell. I mean, just to my hearing of it, I mean, it sounds unbelievably corrupt, and you were about to go there, but if it's true, as I read, that she has anywhere between $2 and $8 million, and that's very conservative, that means she's gotten rich off of her government position, trading what she knows, her contacts, and her deals, while pretending to be really working for the government of the United States, which she really wasn't. Am I overstating it? Am I being fair or unfair?
That's exactly what it is. So you go there, you're in Georgia, you promise Georgia, hey, you're going to have NATO membership down the road, and hey, let's make some money. Let's do a deal. Let's sign a contract. Let's invest here and let's invest there. And there's a lot of money, you know, because these companies like this, the Albright-Stonebridge Group, they have clients. Their clients, they want to go make money. They want to go and invest in these countries that are becoming client states of the United States.
So why, you know, and politicians apparently, I mean, Nancy Pelosi is filthy rich. So is McConnell, by the way. All they do is take a, you know, they take a salary of a couple hundred thousand dollars a year, and somehow they end up with millions and millions of dollars. So, but in this case, these are not even elected officials. These are the members of the cabinets of all the different presidents, mm-hmm. Republicans or Democrat. Shouldn't we do something to stop this? Couldn't there be a rule? If you, for example, here's a simple one, the Rick Sanchez rule, making it up as we go here. If you work for Albright Stonebright or Stonebridge or whatever the hell it's called,
Stonebridge.
You can't work. You can't take a job in the government for at least 3 or 4 years. Well, sorry, just can't do it.
We do that with defense companies. But with our generals, and when they retire,
wait 3 or 4 years, and then they get rich,
or they get waivers from Congress.
Well, they do.
Well, that's what Austin got. I mean, that's how he became Secretary of Defense right after.
He too is apparently worth over $10 million.
Well, he was with I believe Lockheed. So you know, it's so embedded in our culture, our governing culture. How you get rid of it? You won't be able to because it's so...
But then if we don't get rid of it, every time somebody tells me that we have to give $100 million to Ukraine or Bechuana land or wherever the hell, Watusi, name the country, my first question is, are we giving it to them because they need it or are we giving it to them because there's some people there who are cronies who are going to get rich off of it?
Well, that's why you need a Congress that's on top of things that can do oversight and question these kinds of things. They actually have to approve the budgets and what have you, and they can question those things and bring it out. But then They're not. They're too busy fiddling around.
You know, George, I'm left to think that there's no way forward except a way that doesn't look very good. Because if this path continues, whether it's Iran, Gaza, Ukraine, China, the South China Sea, Russia, I mean, all I see is opportunities for people to get rich during conflagrations. Then that means that these things are going to keep happening.
Well, that's why Newland has been involved in nonstop wars from Afghanistan and then Iraq,
yeah,
and all of this time.
I got you all riled up now, so let me let George in here too. George, go ahead. Your response.
That's right, and it's very. Yes, that's very, very, because Michael mentions about the need for congressional oversight. But of course, the way they've rigged it in Congress is that there can never be any oversight because these bills, 1,000-page bills, they arrive and you have to sign them within about 2 hours. So no one in Congress can possibly get through a 1,000-page bill in 2 hours and find what's in them. And that's why. So, yeah, absolutely. All these huge amounts of money pouring here or there, No one knows what the hell they're doing because, hey, unless you sign, then our servicemen are not going to be paid. And imagine that our veterans are not going to be paid. And then there's this moral blackmail. Oh, we have to actually sign within a couple of hours. So nobody really knows what the hell is in these bills.
And you literally have to go to Russian television to find out about these things because you're not going to hear it from Anderson Cooper. You're not going to hear it from anybody on Fox. You're not going to hear it on American newspapers, all these things that are going on that we as Americans should know about because we love this country and want it to work, damn it. And it just makes me crazy to know that most of my fellow citizens don't know about the things that are being done in their name. In their name. Michael, George, you guys are great guests. Interesting discussion. Great conversation. We'll do it again. Before I go, I want to remind you of our mission here, that we try and have these conversations because we think it's important. And we don't want to live in the, oh, I'm on the right or I'm on the left or whatever. No, truths don't live in the right or in the left. Truths are everywhere. We should talk about them wherever they are. I'm Rick Sanchez. I'll be looking for you again right here, where I hope to provide a direct impact.